Miller's Blasting versus Texas AGA. Ms. Cacciatore.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Bill Cacciatore, and at the counsel table is Eileen McCabe, co-counsel in this case, and we represent the plaintiff appellants. May it please the court, we are here because we believe that the district court incorrectly and erroneously dismissed counts 1-3 of our complaint. As you will recall from reading the briefs, so this case involves the plaintiffs being contacted by one Jack Zog of Texas AGA, which is a Texas business, to obtain their business in multi-insurance lines with Texas AGA, or they were the broker to place that insurance policy. That was in July of 1997. Subsequent thereto, I think it was approximately in August 14 of July 1997, they did obtain all insurance from the plaintiffs excepting workman's compensation, which was specifically the reason and the basis for the defendants contacting the plaintiffs to save them money on workman's compensation on their workman's compensation policy, which
now,
was
the other agency was out of the business or something.
Yes, stayed in business but no longer wanted to be a broker agent. So they indicated to Texas AGA to contact their previous customers. And that's how this came about. So at any rate, the defendants came to Illinois, met with Ron Miller and Millie Miller, and said, we'll get your insurance for you. She says, specifically, though, we want the workman's compensation policy. That's our biggest cost. In August 14, 1997, they submitted a policy, several policies with the plaintiffs totaling some $60,000. Millie Miller sent a check to them for $21,000 for those lines, but again, they did not include workman's compensation.
What day was that?
Pardon me?
When was that?
That was August 14, 1997. And subsequent thereto, Millie had made repeated requests to please obtain the workers' compensation policy for us, get the insurance. It was represented to her by Jack Zog that they could save lots of money and could get a lot cheaper than their previous premiums in the years prior thereto. Unfortunately, on
September... So what about the loss runs?
The loss runs were asked of Millie Miller to produce for Jack Zog repeatedly. She attempted to get them. She could not get those loss runs. She asked for help. Jack Zog, who was the direct contact, indicated to her he had to have the loss runs. That's a fact. However, Jack Zog admitted he never read anything Millie gave him. He never did anything. He never lifted a finger to obtain insurance. He didn't attempt to find the loss runs. He did not attempt to contact the previous agent, Nobel. He did nothing in that regard.
Who ultimately found the loss runs? Who put them together?
Finally, it was done through Texas AG&A. Ruth Bangs, who is an executive, a relative or sister of the president of Texas AGA, she obtained them quite promptly, gave it to Jack Zog, and I think she emailed it to him on, I think, September 2. On September 3, a individual by the name of Mark Owens, who was an employee of Miller Blasting, fell in a quarry and was killed, left a wife and children. Millie called, actually after the accident happened, the next day, and says, do you have my workman's compensation? Jack Zog says, no, we don't, but I got a quote, and you can have it today if you want to, this date. She says, well, can you backdate it? I've been waiting for this insurance for some time. She says, no, that can't be done. So she did go ahead and obtain the insurance policy for the September 4, for 97 to September 4, 1998. When the policy, it's part of this case, Legion's policy actually was issued September 1, 1997 to September 1, 1998, which would have been and covered the incident. That's another matter, and there was a reformation of that policy.
It was determined to be a mistake, I guess.
That's what Judge Reinhart decided. That's correct, Your Honor. We filed a suit, including three counts, against Texas AGA and these defendants, Jack Zog. The first one was in negligence, tort negligence, on theory of tort. The second one was upon the statute, placement of insurance policy statute, I think it was 2201, which provided that procure some insurance, should use ordinary care, and accepted negligence in that statute. And the third count, of course, was breach of contract, which Judge Reinhart analyzed. And our problem with the district court's analysis is that we believe Judge Reinhart really did not consider the negligence counts. I think he intertwined the analysis of counts one and two, the negligence and the placement of statute, with the breach of contract. The breach of contract count three, Judge Reinhart decided that the one element necessary to effectuate a contract would have been the a premium, which there was no premium ever because there was never a quote. However, I submit to this court immediately on the fourth the premium that quote that they had received, she accepted that on the phone, several thousands of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars, but she thought he was going to get it. At any rate, the basis of our appeal is that Judge Reinhart entered, first of all, on counts one and two, summary judgment. We respectfully submit to this court that there definitely is a question of fact as to counts one and two because of the basis that Judge Reinhart's analysis talked about what Millie failed to do, which in negligence actions would be an issue of contributory negligence, but never considered the failure of Jack Zog, Texas AGA, to obtain this insurance, the loss runs particularly, in this case. So therefore, I think that counts one and two clearly give rise to a question of fact, and we ask this court to reverse the order and opinion on that, on those two counts, based upon the fact that there's nothing, I think, and even in the decision opinion, that indicates that it considered the negligence counts. Only, and it sounds, in breach of contract, not in negligence. As far as the count three of the complaint, the breach of contract, it is quite true. There was no agreement on the premium between the plaintiffs and the defendants. However, I think it can be considered that she was agreeable and thought he was going to obtain a policy for them. I think on that issue, there is a question of fact as well for a jury to decide whether or not it was understood by Texas AGA and Miller Blasting that they should purchase this policy. And I think that is the question of fact as to why count three also should be reversed and remanded.
I had just one question. That is, if with regard to the workers' comp, she indicated, I guess, to Zog or somebody that this was the mother load of the insurance policy premium.
This was the primary reason that she wanted to obtain that.
And yet it was determined that there wasn't even a workers' comp in effect for 2 years. And I wondered why she would have identified that as the major when she obviously wasn't paying that premium.
Well, one reason was that Nobel kept issuing certificates of renewal to her that she had work comp insurance when, in fact, she did not have it.
So they were the ones that were in error.
That's correct. And so she thought she did have it. She thought it would expire on August 6, 1997, as the briefs indicate.
I hope she was paying a lot lower premium for no insurance.
Well, I hope so, too.
But that's what I mean by comparison. That's the reason I even brought it up, because it would seem that that would be a lot big difference.
And I think she did realize later on that it wasn't paid, and that's why she was so nervous about it and kept calling. So, but this leaves the Miller's Blasting with the liability under Illinois Workers' Compensation Act to continue paying the widow and the children until the children attain their majority and possibly after that.
Thank you, Ms. Cacciatore.
Thank you.
Ms. Hilton.
May it please the Court, I'm Tania Helton. I'm with the law firm of Freeborn and Peters, and we represent the Appalese, Jack Zog, and Texas AGA, Inc. I think in this case, the district court has provided a comprehensive and well-reasoned opinion as to why summary judgment is appropriate. By the sounds of counsel's comments, it seems as if perhaps they're almost conceding on the contract analysis. So I will bypass that for the most part and focus my comments more directly in response to his suggestion that there was a duty that my client failed to meet. The negligence counts in this context is typically the duty arises upon the formation of contract. So his attempt to totally disaggregate the two doesn't necessarily flow the one from the other. But in any event, the court did address the negligence counts and said that whatever duty arose was discharged by the notification on August 4th that Texas AGA had not been able to procure the policy. As for the
what was that? How was that notification made?
In written form, Your Honor. July 8th was when, you know, the appellant sets the date for the formation of contract, and there's just no basis to apply or to express or imply to form a contract. The district court found particularly compelling that there was no discussion or anything about the premium to be paid. What was discussed at that meeting was that they would get a quote, and Jack Zog testified or told Mildred Miller, and she testified to this. Her testimony in this regard is very candid and very clear. She said that Jack Zog told her that she would have to provide him with the loss run information. Without that information, they could not even get a quote. And without that information, she testified she knew that a quote would not be forthcoming. So throughout the rest of July, there were several phone calls where he asks, you know, do you have the loss run information? She's still working on it. Do you have it? No, we don't have it. We can't get it. So on August 4th, when they send the remainder of the policy quotes, and they were just quotes at that point also, he says, here they are. Let us know which ones you want. And by the way, we still don't have the loss run information, so we cannot get you a quote. Let us know if there's anything we can do about that.
I guess it says also we've not received the workers' compensation loss runs.
That's right, Your Honor.
And then the next paragraph, we did not obtain a premium finance quote but can obtain the same type of terms you had last year. That's the only reference that they made at just that one sentence, wasn't it?
In written form, yes. But as I mentioned, there were several discussions that that were had previous to that. So and Mildred Miller testifies that she understood at that point that there was no workman's compensation insurance. You know,
she had to get the loss runs.
That's right. And she didn't. And she never provided them. That's also undisputed. It was my client that was able to get them. And so, you know, the district court found that as of that date, that notification, any duty that would have arisen was discharged. You know, and along those lines, Your Honor, the law also imposes a corresponding duty upon the insured or the prospective insured to provide necessary and truthful information. From the very first moment, it's undisputed that it was communicated to Mrs. Miller that the loss runs were essential. And without them, not only could you not get a policy, because that wasn't even discussed at that point, but you could not even get a quote.
Now, they ultimately, someone from your client got the loss runs. Is that
yes,
right?
They were able to get them ultimately.
It wasn't Zog,
yes.
It was somebody else.
That's true, but that's another immaterial point, Your Honor. Anybody within his organization would be permitted to pursue that.
Now, they got it from the former insurer or the former agency?
Yes, I that's what I recall. I'm not exactly sure where to refer you,
now,
but I think
I'm
it's
just sort of digging this a little bit just because it. I'm confused because there wasn't any workers' comp in force.
That's right.
And whoever had loss runs or whatever obviously didn't provide them earlier to a previous insurer.
Well, you know, when you look at the history of the Miller's Workman's Compensation Insurance, they were operating bare for almost five of the preceding 6 years. Mm. And so perhaps that is part of the problem in obtaining the loss runs because there wasn't much out there because they hadn't had insurance. But my client was totally unaware of that.
Okay.
As a final point, the law also imposes upon them an obligation to function and operate in a manner befitting a reasonably prudent business person in the pursuit of their own affairs. And it's not escaped your attention, I'm sure, that this is a blasting company that we're talking about. We submit to you that operating, even for the month preceding the accident, intentionally and knowingly, without workman's compensation insurance, does not meet even that basic standard. We ask you to affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Hilton. Ms. Cacciatore?
All that having been said, Your Honor, I respectfully submit to you that it is not dispositive of count one and two of the complaint that sound in negligence. That presents a question of fact for the jury to decide. It has nothing to do about the loss ones. The jury would determine as to whether or not Texas AGA, who did get it amazingly, and I guess they did it quite promptly, why they couldn't have done it before, sooner. So we would have had insurance, which we did contract with them and did pay. And I respectfully submit that I believe that, in all due respect to Judge Reinhart, that he was wrong in the analysis as to count one and two, because this case being dismissed without any consideration of the two counts on negligence, which is a common law duty, and count two, which is the duty arising by the statute, 2201, we have a right to proceed to the jury on those issues. Thank you very much, and I'd ask to reverse.
All right. Thank you, Scott Shorey. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed.